Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. Today's guest is Hank Berman, who is back to talk about something else because on the heels of his last Love Letters Live, he started to talk about the 60s and feelings he had about what was to come, and I asked him to come back. So here we are with Hank Berman, who is a psychotherapist in private practice in San Francisco. And what were you going to talk about?
Well,
it's all yours.
It's basically, I was going to just comment on the headlines, particularly in the area of the Middle East and the rise of ISIS and so forth.
And what did you see in the 60s that would have led you to even think of such a thing?
Well,
anything?
It was, you know, particularly, let's say, for example, in Afghanistan, where I traveled extensively at the time, as part of my Hajira on the hippie trail, which many thousands of young people engaged in, leaving from the United States and Europe and hitchhiking or traveling by bus or some way across Europe. For me, it was North Africa and then up to Turkey and across through Iran and then Afghanistan, Pakistan, and India. And then I continued on. It was just observations about the integration of religious life, social life, and political life in those countries. And my thinking was that, you know, I went through the Khyber Pass in Afghanistan,
mm-hmm.
and you could see how difficult it would be for an invading force to conquer Afghanistan. And and then when you get through the Khyber Pass and into Afghanistan, you would see how challenging it might be for an attempt to impose Western democracy, for example.
Oh, I see where you're going.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
And so I noted that, and I didn't foresee events unfolding the way they did. Although, you know, I'm a student of history, and so I know that imperialism is relentless. It does not give up. It seeks to find other ways.
Because you use that word, imposing democracy, or however you just said that, and that really is.
Yeah, and I was, you know, I was not hopeful that the United States and the other Western countries that we think of as running the show globally or attempting to.
As running the show, yes.
That would make that attempt to impose its resource-seeking behaviors.
I mean, what
that
about
part of the world?
The narcissistic nerve of that has always struck me.
The Jews call it chutzpah.
Yes, they do.
Which has a great definition.
And we see our politicians. I remember this from grammar school, and this is in the 40s, getting up in front of microphones and crowds and saying, we are the strongest and the richest and the most powerful. It was embarrassing then.
It's not only embarrassing, but the remnants of that kind
rude.
Of thinking, it's arrogance.
Yes.
And it's... It has a fundamental. The word of that word exceptionalism is really a tragic application of that word, so this idea that our way is the best way and the better way, and from that a desire to impose it.
Right.
But that's just.
I think all people can assume that their way. Have a right to assume that their way is the best way and then enjoy it and be quiet.
That's what religion is predicated on. And so if you don't enjoy it, if you don't be quiet about it, then you seek to impose your beliefs on others. If you are the chosen people or your God is the correct God, then others must be the incorrect God, and then you have a right to, if you follow that line.
So that philosophy of someone has to be wrong for you to be right.
Yeah, and then when they're wrong, then you are justified in those activities like Trump is...
Okay, so follow it up. Hold that thought for a minute.
Sure.
Follow up your hippie journey.
Well, so I went through those.
To Trump.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well. So just noticing that how, like I say, interwoven and undifferentiated religious life is from social life and political life in those countries, which is different than how we operate and how we manifest.
So how is it differentiated?
Well,
in those
so
countries?
You know, religious life is on the streets.
So it's combined in those countries is what you're saying.
That's right.
Is that, okay.
It's undifferentiated.
Yes, yeah, okay.
And not only do you live by certain precepts, but you speak about them and you articulate them and they are profound and historical, further than, goes back much further than ours does, our religious history. Ours is based on the freedom to practice. Theirs is based on something very different, which is the necessity to practice what, you know, the mandate from God. So to this idea that we knew enough and we did not, despite all the folks who do know a great deal in the State Department and so forth, and who can...
Can you just say that a little longer form, more clearly? We knew it. We didn't know enough about what?
About... we didn't know enough about Islamic life.
And how we got into this mess we are in today.
Although there were and are many people far more knowledgeable regarding history, the history of the Middle East and so forth, than I am, and many observers. However, the implications of that knowledge did not filter up.
What should
they
have?
And it didn't run, it never ran counter to our imperialist mandate. So what you're seeing now is that mandate translated into military activity and the subsequent blowback. It's no secret that ISIS, its predecessors, were the people that Al-Qaeda, the mother organization, I guess, coming out of Salafist and Wahhabi Islam, was funded initially in Afghanistan by the United States, militarily and so forth. And then when Russia was kicked out of Afghanistan, the guns turned on us.
Right.
Meaning the message is go away and leave us alone. And we don't seem to be able to do that. And whatever the subterfuge, it's really about natural resources and geopolitical considerations.
If you were in charge right now, I know that's such a not fair question, but okay, let's say if you had been in charge earlier, what would you have done to bend that tide away? Could you have seen a way around that had we been smarter?
You know, it's there's something about the philosophy that seems to bear, that has some value, intrinsic value of give and you shall receive. And by that I mean, let's say, for example, a no-strings-attached infusion of money to help build infrastructure, hospital educations, hospital schools, roads, hygiene. And again, of course, this is almost impossible. It's fanciful to speak of no strings attached. But you would see, I think, a different kind of blowback, a positive blowback. Just think about after World War II and the care packages, you know, all signed by the United States, the gift to the United States, and the goodwill that's generated by that kind of giving that's just voluntary versus at the, despite Mao Zedong saying that power comes in the barrel of a gun. Yeah, we have the power, but we don't seem to get the love and respect and affection. We get quite the opposite. And, I'm not, there's no way that I'm touting or supporting the kind of blowback that's coming. It's Neanderthal. It's based on primitive assumptions, I think. But again, that's there goes the I think.
There was also kind of, between Europe and the United States, kind of a shared culture. So when you say that these gifts brought goodwill, you think that would have done the same? I mean, they had their own territorial angers and difficulties in these other areas.
The difficulty there, I think it would have.
You're saying
the
education?
The Peace Corps did. The Peace Corps brought goodwill. And just imagine that tenfold. And the problem was this. Who do you funnel through to get those resources, that wealth, or that those gifts to the people who need it most?
Yeah, so they're not taken by the people.
And whose support and love we would value and would translate into the absence of terrorism. And that is corrupt leadership. That was the problem in the 60s. In Africa particularly,
I was going to mention that, yes.
Yeah, so you give $1 billion in foreign aid and 99% of it goes into the pockets of the...
That's right. But that's, that still goes on.
Of course it does.
Yes. I mean, it goes on all over.
We thought, well, we could buy just enough goodwill by buying the leadership. This notion of greed,
yes.
is really destroying
yes.
So many of those the aspirations and hopes of goodwill, people of goodwill on both sides, on all sides.
You know, I think all over. I think mm-hmm. people who run, I remember my father saying this when I was a girl, mm-hmm. that if somebody wants to run for very high office in this country, there is already something wrong with him. And there are too many money perks involved. You know, people leave office and they get $1 million a speech. I mean, there's too much offered.
No
There's
question
too much
about it.
Too much connected with the perks
so
of presidency.
So when you think about the moment you think about doing something about that politically,
mm-hmm.
You run up against the screams and execrations of the ruling class that say you're attacking the right to the freedom of choice. You're
free
attacking
speech.
Free speech.
They can speak.
It's nonsense.
They can speak.
Of course they can.
And
speak.
They can charge whatever they want. But let's say they just don't get to keep it; they have to turn it over to a charity. Something.
Or tax. A significant tax on the wealthy. Now, look, you know, that's a shibboleth at the left, but nevertheless it has credence and gravitas.
But it would be nice if these positions couldn't be used for future self-gain. I mean, we're talking about greed.
What's the quote? There ought to be a law.
There ought to be a law, yes. There are laws. They're not enforceable,
you know,
so many
what
of them.
What was Hillary Clinton's response when asked about the $650,000 per speech? She said, well, they were going to pay it. They were willing to pay it.
Yes.
As if that sort of justifies this snarky game, as if we're to overlook, at least, you know, I got to give Trump credit early on in the campaign. He said he bought politicians.
Yeah.
He paid.
Well, I think that's why people tend to gravitate towards him, because he was saying truth.
On that.
And he was one of the few, that's right, and one of the few people you could hear him speak, heaven help us, without hearing the PR team behind him moving his mouth.
Right, and when he said that, so here's the dilemma. He would say that people nodded assention because they knew it all along. They understand corruption. They understand buying politicians. They're not stupid. The American body politic can be manipulated, but on some issues they're not stupid. You don't give a politician $1 million for his campaign or her campaign and then say, so good luck and need to call me back. No favors.
That gets back to your difficulty
problem,
of no strings attached.
Right. The problem is, so he said that, it reverberated, it resonated with me. You know, yeah, finally somebody's speaking the truth.
Right.
But what he's going to do about that is give them more money. In other words, he says that to get your attention and get your affection and your loyalty to him, and then he has no plan to act on that in any way that would promote fairness or justice economically, period. And you got to see through that. That's called populism at its worst. And, you know, we had that with Huey Long.
That's right.
And so sometimes the most populist-sounding politicians are the most corrupt themselves.
Well, I mean,
but they know how to appeal. They're smart.
I don't want to get into it, but we've had more dangerous than that. Be very
yeah, Father Coughlin was a dangerous guy.
I was thinking of other countries also.
Uh-huh. Oh, yes, of course,
uh-huh.
of course.
Right.
And you see what's happening as a right. result when you send red meat to the populace. Some of them want more than the red meat, like a guy in England who shot that parliamentarian who was only had a position that they should not exit the European community.
Yes.
She was shot to death and stabbed multiple times.
So you know, there is something to be said. We don't seem to be able to keep our eye on the fact that just because there's a market for it doesn't make it right in so many concepts.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Across the board.
We seem to be stuck on that.
And create a market for those things. How many brands of toothpaste do you need?
Right. Well, I always say that I would like to go into the one little gray drugstore that has two kinds of shampoos and three kinds of toothpaste, because I don't need that many. I'd like to feel I have a choice.
Sure.
Maybe
sure.
I know, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then, just as a whole side issue, the advertising, now, I mean, this is on a whole other thing now, but advertising that the car companies and cosmetic companies do, they spend, what, billions? On advertising.
What's that Dylan line? They make you think you're the one that could never win what's never been won, could never do what's never been done. Meantime, life outside goes on all around you. It's a great line.
Oh,
it's
that
great.
Is, uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yes.
He was talking about the advertising.
But if they didn't spend that money on advertising, could their products not be a quarter the price? And
it's, you know, the whole system has linkages.
Right.
And it's if you start to think about it and you don't have a spiritual practice and you don't have a way to keep happy, as we were talking about before we went on air, so to speak,
then you can become sickened, literally,
yes,
by the contemplation and intellectual engagement of what's happening. If you can, you know, it's funny because it made me think about what was called the golden age of education. So the New York Times had an article about it. 1930s, people go to City College and other colleges, tuition-free, hotbed of radicalism, you know, Bolshevism, Trotskyite, socialist, at least in New York, certainly. And so these the students then graduated in their fields, much of which was in the education field. They went on to become teachers and then principals of elementary schools all over New York. And I benefited from the people who took education seriously and who taught us as students in elementary school the notion of critical thinking.
Yes.
Do you know who was probably one of the most dangerous people if she was to be taken seriously in the 20th century?
Ooh.
It was Barbara Bush. I'll tell you why.
Tell me why. I don't know.
Every president's wife has a campaign of some kind. Rosalind Carter, I think it was mental health. I'm not sure. Jacqueline Kennedy's, maybe hers was mental health. But at any rate, Barbara Bush said illiteracy. We need to combat illiteracy. Of course, there were empty words, and it was something for her to do, like gardening, I suppose, you know, back in those days. You had to have a cause celeb and you know, go out and do something about it, but don't let it be serious. God forbid. God forbid you should say, so as a result of believing that critical think or education is really important and that the defeat of illiteracy in this country is really important, we're going to now politically allocate a percentage of the national budget, perhaps even out of necessity, away from the military towards education, teach critical thinking. No, that's nonsense. That we can't do that. Let's just talk about it. But at any rate, they're talking about it, if you took it seriously, we have a higher illiteracy rate than Cuba. Go figure. I mean, mm-hmm. That's not to say Cubans are doing anything bad and we should beat them, because that would be demonizing the other. But rather, we should at least be competing.
But I always had that feeling also, the math teachers and the English teachers, think and express. Yes.
And so my generation, we were able to read the headlines and say, is this true? Who is writing this and why are they writing it?
Well, sure, that's why we brought in current events. That was
remember that?
Uh-huh,
sure.
That
sure.
Was, yes, of course.
And
talk about it.
And talk about it, deconstruct it.
Yes.
You know, it's interesting. In 1956, I believe it was, there was a headline in the Daily News, which was the paper of my family, working class people in New York, my family. And it said, documents discovered implicating Secretary of War Stanton in the assassination of President Lincoln. Like 100 years after the fact, or 90 years after the fact. So when are we going to find out about who killed JFK?
Oh, well, you know? Yes.
So, so the teacher made us think about it. What was going on back then? Why wasn't this brought to light? Who covered it up? Why was it covered up? And
I think there was not as much manipulation then.
There wasn't as much sophistication in the manipulative operations. That
okay,
were going on
better
there.
Put, yes. Yeah.
But so things came through that maybe wouldn't today.
Well, I remember at one point in my life, I think when I was in college, and I was mm-hmm. reading the paper, and I remember being very conscious of the fact that I was reading the newspaper to see what my government wanted me to believe.
Well, that's critical thinking. That presumption mm-hmm. of doubt, the possibility, not doubt prior to investigation.
Mm-hmm.
In AA, they call it contempt to him prior to investigation, which is a bad thing. But doubt, in terms of reading the paper,
yeah.
is a good thing.
Yes. I mean, today, you know, you have studies. Studies used to be different. Now you have a study there's a new study that shows there may be a link or a connection between A and B if, and there's so many ifs and maybes, and it's brought to you by the company that's making the drug.
That's what I mean by critical thinking.
Uh-huh.
If you say, who is writing this message?
Yes.
Who is sponsoring this uh-huh. investigation,
right,
this survey?
Exactly. Yes.
And what are the economic benefits that might accrue to them if we bought into this crap?
Right.
Excuse
right.
my language.
Do you remember when you couldn't advertise? It was considered so tacky. There was no such thing until fairly recently, advertising mm-hmm. doctors or medications.
Oh, sure.
It was totally unethical.
Not anymore.
I know. I see that. And now they refer to each other. Television says CR for
no, they used to be. No. In the, let's be honest. In the 50s, there were TV advertising about smoking
Tarryton is better for your health. These doctors say, you know, so.
No, I'm talking about medications.
Oh,
being
medications for
yes,
sure.
Yes.
Medications for now. You know, they're advertising the antidepressants, and they're saying they're making up great things. I say, now, I don't. There may be something that to this notion of restless leg syndrome.
Oh yes,
but I remember
I've
the
heard,
first time.
Right.
Yeah, but I first watched this. They're making up this crap.
Right.
Making creating a diagnosis.
That's right. Well,
and
that,
then selling some medication that's aimed at so somebody who shakes
their
leg a little
bit. That's
what you were
saying
before.
Right. Mm-hmm. Creating the need.
Yeah, creating.
They
the need.
You see IBS also.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
IBS. So you
Classic.
Feel very sophisticated
right.
because
right.
you're using a medical term.
Right.
That irritable bowel syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
Just
mm-hmm.
people are insane. And then they have the nerve to refer you on the television to page 34 in a magazine so you can see their ad.
All the time. All the time.
It's insane.
And you know, the dumbing down of America was purposeful. I believe that it was purposeful. If you have critical thinking, people aren't going to purchase things that they don't need, and they're going to consider other variables in the determination of what they do and don't need. So this idea of undoing the critical thinking piece.
Do you have patients coming to you requesting certain medications?
All the time.
Because I know internists,
sure.
I think that's just the bane of their existence. Patients who come and say, I saw on television that I should be taking such and such.
Well, I always say, you know, I don't dispense medication under the purview of my license.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll often say, let's talk about this a little bit before we rush to ameliorate those symptoms with a medication. Maybe the symptoms are telling you something conflict that's going on. Or anxiety that you have might be an arrow pointing to some internal conflict that we can resolve without medication. And people hopefully buy into the way I present that, and we do the work.
Yes.
Oh, so.
People are gullible because they want to be, I guess.
Well, yeah, you're inculcated from day one to believe in the quick fix.
And we look away from trouble.
Right. All problems are solvable through through medication.
Yeah. Of course, there is another issue. I wonder what you think of this. And that is, there's too much communication in the world. It used to be, a lot of my sentences start like this, when I was a girl.
Classic.
Okay.
Every generation does.
But yet, when I was a girl, we didn't know what was going on in every corner of the world. We didn't know about every grotesque murder and genocide and misery and starvation. We knew what was going on in our own backyard, our own city, and our own state, and we could help that. We could do something. It was close enough that our actions could be beneficial.
Well, you see, there's a disconnect.
How do you fix the whole world?
There's a disconnect. In the media, the established media, so to speak, whether it's newspaper columns, the editorial board, whether it's television, which has taken over in terms of the source of news, and aside from the internet for people who know how to look. Tell me how often you see Noam Chomsky or any Elizabeth Warren on television analyzing the news and offering people an alternative view as to the etiology and causality of particular struggles and suffering throughout the world. There is a direct link between what we were talking about earlier, the greed on the part of those who own and operate U.S. corporations and the incalculable suffering of children in the world. There is a direct line. No one is able to talk about that direct link and get on television.
Oh, okay, because no one talks about a lot of things, and the people who do bring us news are kind of flatliners who just yap. And I understand that they don't want to present a bias one way or the other.
No, they're told not to. They get fired if they do. Or you think Fox News is going to allow Ralph Nader to be on as a regular commentator or even CNN?
Well, they rarely even raise their eyebrows, the people who do present it.
Well, if you look closely, maybe. Anderson Cooper raises an eyebrow once in a while.
Walter Cronkite used to.
Yeah. Well,
people used
Edward
to.
Edward R. Murrow.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
He could cut to the quick and
well,
he
because
could
you
confront
know
power.
News has become such a huge industry.
And it's become a shill
yes.
for those corporations
I
who
know.
Continue to want
yeah.
to deceive the American public. So you don't see information about class action suits. You don't see information about people organizing on a grassroots level to change that system structurally. You do not see it on television. God forbid people would see, be exposed, and then believe, and then act
They have to prevent that, so they put these idiots. They're not idiots. They're very smart, actually.
Right.
Bill O'Reilly is a very smart man. He's just a prostitute. So is William Buckley. Very smart, high IQ, yeah. Prostitution.
You also don't see people presenting much good in the world on the news. And I think, personally, that if the news is constantly bad enough, you stay frightened and you stay tuned to see what's next.
Frightened is important for the sponsors.
Want you in front of the news.
Well, it's that. It's in its own right. It's mm-hmm. self-sustaining. But if you have, this is the lesson of Goebbels that was taken in by the American media establishment and those who control it and own it. You tell a lie over and over again, people believe
yes,
it. The bigger the lie, the more the belief.
Right.
And I think something else that Goebbels said is it's very easy to have the people vote and protest vociferously in order to have their rights taken away. All you need to do is create an internal or an external threat, label it, perseverate on it, and the people will say, I don't need freedom of speech. Please make me safe.
Well, do you remember? That was Joseph McCarthy.
Yeah, of course.
Joseph McCarthy would wave around a list saying, I have here a list.
Speaking of which, it was...
I understand it was empty. There was nothing
right.
on it.
He got 57 communists from Heinz ketchup,
right.
the label.
Oh, my goodness.
Speaking of which, I read something today about Donald Trump being a mentee of Roy Cohn.
Oh, my goodness.
And Roy Cohn was one of the experts in manipulating fear and intimidation. And Trump carries that banner forward. Interesting. And he died ignominiously. Combed it.
Yes, I remember that.
And hopefully Trump will as well, not physically. I'm not wishing for his physical death, but his banner will move into the entrails of history.
Yes.
Let's hope.
We're in a very, very weird time.
Yeah. Again, Dylan
On
said,
the other hand, there is so much positive. You were talking about the dumbing down of America.
Mm-hmm.
And I have noticed that the dumber getting dumber, but the smarter getting smarter.
Sure. That's called class struggle. When you wake up to the notion of class...
Even just intellectually, people...
Does it lead you? It leads you to understand that what's going on is not about racial divides. It's about class divides.
You were talking about that people not speaking out.
Mm-hmm.
And I had asked you before, had you seen Jackie Spears' letter?
No, I don't think
Every once in a while, there is someone who speaks out so exquisitely.
Mm-hmm.
And she took on Congress about gun control.
Can you believe what happened yesterday?
No, yes.
Of course.
No, and you'd think they'd be embarrassed.
Are you shocked?
Yes.
What shocks you? Oh, it doesn't shock me.
Because I think they would be embarrassed at this stage.
They're still adhering to the belief that they can convince people of their argument about Second Amendment.
Okay, good point. Talk about the Second Amendment. What do you want to say?
Essentially, they believe in their power to convince us through manipulation that our freedom and our safety is better served by having more guns than less guns. Yesterday, or right after Orlando, the terrible, terrible tragedy, Trump's response was, can you imagine if there was a gun pointing in the other direction, if people were armed, there would be this wouldn't have happened. There wouldn't have been as many slayings. And, in the face of this, he's advocating for more people having guns, not less. That's insanity, the definition, doing the same thing and hoping for a different result. He wants to do more of the same thing. Put guns in the hands of more people and have shootouts in classrooms.
But we're also talking about the kinds of guns they have. Does it take a genius to know the difference between a
hunting rifle?
A duck hunter and an AK-47 mass murderer?
No, it doesn't.
But apparently it seems to.
That's critical thinking.
Okay. Well, okay, there has to be so much more of that.
Absolutely.
Critical thinking.
No question about
You go on Facebook or you go on the internet and you see, I had said something on Facebook about, doesn't even matter what, about, banning weapons. And my grandson writes back and he says, if they try to take my guns, they're going to get my bullets. And I wrote back to him. I said, my dear grandson, I don't think you are on a terror watch list. And I don't think you want people with assault weapons trolling the schools where your three adorable children are. People don't seem to have the ability to make a distinction.
Or connection.
Yes.
No, that's one of the reasons we're in very serious trouble.
Go hunt a duck. be my guest.
Right. Hunt a duck. Have a 45 under your bed if you need to have one.
Yes.
But take buying these guns and then buying armor. And by the way, nobody, they said, this is unusual. He wants to buy body armor. I'm not sure they told the FBI. I'm not sure they sounded the alarms. They just said it's very strange. Or, wow, this guy might be dangerous. But, you know, there's, I think the big one is a combination of, you know, say strange behavior, but that's why a background check, including mental health.
Yes.
And narcissistic personality disorder, guns. Narcissists do not like being confronted with the contradictions that they pose.
Okay.
And when you beat your wife and you're arrested for domestic violence,
you're on that list. You don't get a gun.
You don't get a gun.
Yes.
And you're borderline personality disorder, or, you know, unfortunately, most schizophrenics are not violent. But if you have paranoid schizophrenics or a history of violence, no guns.
Okay, I'm so glad it's you saying this now.
Well,
because you've got something behind you to. You've got some authority behind you also.
You know,
so I'm happy
it's kind of easy, I'll admit, in retrospect, to diagnose this guy.
Yes, yes.
But you could just...
But there were always red flags. There are always red flags, it turns out, when people start looking into histories.
Well, they need to look into histories as they're unfolding.
Right.
And then do something to cut that person off from access to a weapon of mass destruction.
You know, and as far as free speech, I must say, critical. Mm-hmm. But we already don't have free speech.
No.
We can't scream fire in a crowded theater. I don't think we can scream bomb in an airport. We have to know these.
You can say anything you want in this country, but if people start to listen.
Oh, that's a whole other issue. Yes.
Martin Luther King could say all he wanted, and Malcolm X could say all they wanted about race relations. It was no threat.
Right.
But when they began to talk about class issues and poverty, they were killed.
I believe that people began to listen
and say, wait a second, this guy may be telling me something that's true and maybe calling me to action, like a tent city in Washington to fight poverty, much like the Veterans March was designed to do something that flew in the face of those in power, and they killed a lot of veterans.
Well, okay, so there's mm-hmm. something that has always kind of, well, irritated me, mm-hmm. I guess, to say the least. The yapping that goes on, you know, the petitions that go around. Sign this petition. Write a letter to your congressman.
I don't do that.
That's why wastebaskets are for.
Yeah.
And they won't listen until they're actually threatened. This is the pathetic part. They don't listen until they're physically threatened somehow.
You're talking until they're, about the Congress people?
Yes.
But they don't listen until you can buy them out with more gifts and more money than the people who are currently buying them out.
Okay, well, that's a nice alternative to bricks through the window then.
Well, I don't like either one.
My goodness,
we got to begin to talk about a restoration to the principle of we elect you, you work for us.
Oh, that's another thing I always say.
The middle class, the working class, the poor.
To our president, you're working for me, mister, madam, whoever it is going to be. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But something goes to their heads. You can see it as they take office. They forget who's working for whom.
Mm-hmm. There's also something about, you know, Obama had a good point when he referred to FDR, who told the American people, make me do this. And he went to Congress at some point to talk about evictions. And he said, you know what's going on in this country, guys? You know, and it was that time, mostly men. And he said, when there are an eviction notice that's served and furniture is being put in the street in St. Louis and Detroit and Los Angeles and New York, mm-hmm. a gang of teenagers are moving right to that place, taking that furniture and putting it back in the apartment. We don't have enough sheriffs to enforce the number of evictions that are going down because of your policies. Give these people something, or else they're going to come after you, and it won't be with the ballot. And they froze, and they realized he was right. People were talking about socialism. People were talking about restructuring. Norman Thomas got a lot of votes. And FDR convinced them to fear, to quake in their boots, so they gave us Social Security, unemployment insurance, and now they want to take it back. Well, that was just a temporary measure to shut people up. And now we have to stop it. And so the Republican Party is all about restoration to the 1920s and early 30s. And if we go along with that, in a sense, I feel terrible, but I almost want to say you're going to get what you deserve.
Let it fall apart and we'll start over.
Now,
thank you for doing this with me. There's so much to say that there's no one day long enough. But maybe you'll come back again as things go along and talk about more. I just, and as far as the love letter goes, You hear people, I mean, oh, okay, well, just because you're a psychotherapist, I'm going to say this to you. There's a lot of, after Orlando, there was something the news was filled with. After the tragedy, the kindnesses. The kindnesses is what got a lot of attention. Mm-hmm. Now, kindness should get a lot of attention.
Absolutely.
But after every tragedy, there's focus on the kindness. And talk about disconnect.
There isn't, you know, I am, just like everybody else, I am enormously touched. I'm brought to tears.
Sure.
And I resonate profoundly on an emotional level with those small and large kindnesses
right.
of people. But I think there is a glossing over of a call to action.
That's what I'm saying.
Yep.
And also, you know, there is that saying that when you're kind to the wicked, you end up being wicked to the kind,
mm-hmm.
which makes me want to write a love letter to, I mean, they talk about this and say the only way to fight this is with love.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not exactly true, but there's
something. The only way to fight it is with consciousness and mindfulness.
Yes.
And aware, political awareness.
Conscious.
As to the links between those.
But to encourage our representatives to do the right thing.
Not by
I'm writing to Jackie Spears.
Oh, Jackie Spears will do
yeah.
the right thing because she's
right.
on the right side of
yes.
it.
Yes.
However, she's in the minority.
I understand that, but still encouragement is important to people
oh,
who are in the...
Thank you,
yes,
thank you,
yes,
thank you.
Yes.
And I've done that.
Yeah, I have too.
But I don't write petitions
I don't
Obama
either.
Anymore because I know... Yeah, yeah.
I know. Yep, yep. All right, dear. Thank you a lot. I'll talk to you later.
I hope so.
More to say.
This was fun.
Yes. Thank you for listening. And let's just hope it turns out well.